Gals Have Moxie, a pop culture podcast that colors outside the lines with Chelsea, Jen, Megan, and Paige. Although, again, we are back for another mini Moxie with just Megan and Chelsea, and our friend Gavin is back.
Yay! That's me yaying me, which is usually how it goes.
You gotta, if you're not your own best hype girl, how can you be anyone else's? You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Exactly. So
that's exactly what that host says on that reality show. Can I get a okay? Okay.
Oh, I love that.
I'm a huge Drag Race fan, but I it's funny to make fun of it too.
I mean, it's I think it's meant to be in a way though. So.
Oh yeah. I mean, this is a tangent. We're already starting the tangents, but
it's okay. We love Drag Race here.
We all love Drag Race. It's fine.
But from the top down, it originally was basically made to make fun of Top Model. And now it's so self-serious that like I get nervous when I make fun of it because I'm like, oh, this is not the audience anymore. But you know, whatever.
Oh yeah, the show got really serious, and I feel like things like crafty are an insult whenever crafty is what you're supposed to be.
Last season when Ross said her outfit looked like it was an arts and crafts project, I was like, that is drag.
You mean Shay's outfit?
Yes. Yeah.
I was so personally insulted because hers was my favorite that night.
Yeah.
I was so mad. But I do like that, you know. Nothing about RuPaul and Drag Race has come out and been like, oh, that wasn't great, was it?
Yeah.
Ira. I said what I said.
That's true. That's true. No contestants have been like, well. So
let me tell you. Yeah, exactly. So we're not talking about Drag Race today. We are talking about the last two episodes of WandaVision. And before we even get into it, I'm just like, I'm already sad that we don't have a new episode next week. Like, I'm already sad.
You can just go down to your local comic book shop. Well, I mean, pre-pandemic, you could just go down to your local comic book shop and make your own next episode. Just pick up some back issues and not the same.
It's not Paul Bettany, okay? It's not Paul Bettany. Just saying. And I am excited, you know, for Falcon and Winter Soldier. I am so excited for Loki to see how that even plays into anything. But like, I tweeted this, so roll tape, it's real. And I said, I was like, I think this is by and large one of the best things the MCU has just like ever given us. And to reference that stupid article again, and I still refuse to say the publication, it didn't need to be a shorter movie. I think we needed these 9 episodes to fully grasp the breadth of everything.
I think we can all agree the discourse around this show is awful.
Is dumb.
I have muted so many things about WandaVision because I'm like, people, one, need to calm down. Like, everybody calm down a little bit. It is a TV show. I'm like always shocked when Marvel makes something somewhat good and thoughtful. Like, even just a hair thoughtful, my expectations are so low. So when this one kind of stepped over the bar for the most part, I do have quibbles. I was like, huh, I like this. I do not like anybody else talking about this.
But it is true, though, because you get so many people who are genuinely angry that they didn't deliver what they personally expected out of it. And you're like, hey, quick question. Do you know how TV works? Do you know how entertainment works? Like, I understand. Yes, we've been going through episode by episode. And I mean, there is that conversation, you know, about the movies themselves and what they're going to show and what they're not going to show and, you know, whatever. But the idea that you are owed something is mind-boggling to me. If you feel like this, you could have written it better, please, by all means, try and do a better job and then do it yourself. Like, you can't get mad that they're not pandering directly to you. And I feel like that's a lot of the discourse, is that people were just genuinely angry that it wasn't exactly the way they envisioned it in their heads. I'm sorry, I had to. But I feel like that's true. Like, so much of the discourse is, oh, they're not going to give us that. Well, they're not going to give us that. They're going to do that and not this. What? Excuse me. I hated it. That's like the dumbest. Like, you could say, oh, I don't like it. Oh, I really loved it. You know, that's fine. But like, getting genuinely offended and writing stupid articles saying, well, they didn't give me what I believe needed to be in there. So go work at Marvel then. Go. I don't understand.
And what's funny too is there's an argument to be made that a lot of these movies are, and not, and I know we're talking about WandaVision, but also in general, a lot of the Marvel movies are sort of made to please as wide of an audience as humanly possible, nonetheless, too.
Oh, yeah.
Marvel's big thing is trying to be everything to everybody. So it's even funnier when it gets drilled down to these, and this is sort of what people have to remember. They're a minority. They're a very vocal minority, but they're a minority of people who have a belief that because they like something, they in turn have some sort of ownership over it. These are large corporations that have had copyrights on these characters for many, many years. That was another frustrating thing this past week, is there was a huge discourse about copyright and how long people should be able to own things. And like, I understand, I don't think people should be able to own things in perpetuity if the person who created it is dead. But like, the people that are like, yeah, it should be 8 years. And it's like, no, I don't need 27 Star Wars trilogies in 2017. God. So like,
please stop.
Like when the Great Gatsby. Hold.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. Seriously, I've been dreading the Great Gatsby going into public domain, and it did. And they're already talking about the CW version of it. And first off, this is completely off the other hand. All these things that people love are generally very overrated white male things from a long time ago that are very dated and dumb as hell. And that's who's bitching and
complaining, is angry white men in their basement.
It is. So things like Gatsby are very overrated. I do love that Marvel is kind of copyrighted, because I don't think people would write really good stories.
No.
Because we've seen some good Sherlock Holmes. We've seen a lot of bad Sherlock Holmes. Like, all these things that are being made and remade, like, it's very exhausting. Like, we've talked about this with a bunch of Jane Austen things.
Mm-hmm.
Some are so bad.
So bad.
And it's just people taking up space and making the same story. And that's what I worry about with copyright. People just making the same 1,000 things over and over and not having an original thought.
It's funny. There was a couple of years ago, the copyright went up for James Bond in Canada. Because other countries have different copyright laws, and there was immediately talk of Canadians trying to do their own James Bond series. And in that specific case, I was almost just like, you know what? Let's do it. Let's have Canadian James Bond. I want to see it. But like, that's the thing. And obviously nothing has come to fruition of that, because
why would it?
And like, where could they sell it? You know, the international market is really the normal thing. Exactly. So it's just specifically Canada that gets their own James Bond. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. The conversation around copyright is super complicated, but everything you said, Chelsea, I completely agree with. The people that are like, oh, I really want it so I can do my own thing. And it's like, no, babe. Let's think about it. And also just, you know, make up fan fiction exists for a reason. So
exactly.
Like,
reason.
And we are not saying fan fiction is bad or anything.
No, not at all. So in fact, many I think people it's a great are outlet.
Better writers at fan fiction than regular novel writers. I will put that out there, especially for queer storylines, because that's where you're going to get it.
And on top of that, I think a lot of people learn to write by writing fan fiction.
Oh, absolutely.
They find communities that they tap into, and those people help each other out. And you know, I think some of the best writing I've ever done has been peer reviewed. So like, Yeah. So absolutely nothing against fan fiction, but like, if you're looking for an outlet, it's there.
It's there. Go to our, what is it? Archive of Our Own. Yeah. Go there. Absolutely. Everybody.
And you know, there are plenty of people who have gotten like publishing deals through fan fiction. People who have gotten really, I mean, there of course are two sides to everything, because then, you know, you could be a really popular fan fiction and it can be written really poorly. It just has like a certain type of subject, and that's how, you know, 50 Shades got made. So, you know, there, it's, so there are two sides of it, but there are plenty of people who like, oh, what is her name? She just released her second book. Her name's Emma. I can't remember her last name, but she just released her second book, and like Reese's Book Club picked it up, and she's like, I literally started writing with fan fiction. Like it's, I mean, that's somehow people do it. And like, we talked about this on Once Upon a Stream, where we were talking about The Mandalorian, where the MCU is kind of like Mandalorian in terms of it rides that really nice line between, if I don't know anything about this, I could still enjoy it and have fun and love it. And if I do like the comics and I do read the comics, it gives you enough of Easter eggs that you catch them. So I feel like the MCU is kind of like Mandalorian in that way, where, you know, they're riding that fine line between being accessible to everyone instead of like catering too far to people who don't know anything or too far to people who know everything. You know what I mean?
Megan, what you're saying is, if I write a good WandaVision fan fiction, then change all the names later, I can become a millionaire?
Yes.
Correct.
Perfect.
That is exactly how that works. Just make it gay. Just make sure it's gay.
Everything I write is gay. It's great.
It's fine. We love that.
Welcome back to the WandaVision.
We can't even get into that fully yet. We can't dive that far yet. We'll get there. So, okay. So I want to talk about, let's talk about the clips reel type episode.
Previously on.
Yeah. Which was episode 8. It is a little jarring that it's not an even 10. I like even numbers. I like even numbers.
So I have a weird theory about why it's 9 episodes, and it's purely because of actors. Okay, so if you notice in the end credits, Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany switch who gets top billing in every episode. So Elizabeth Olsen gets it in all the odd numbers, so she gets more of the top billing.
5 instead of 4.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that is a smart agent. That is a very smart agent.
So I love that. I low-key think that's the reason why they did 9 episodes.
Okay, so actually, before we can even get into episode 8, there was, I don't know if it was like, I can't remember what it was that came out, if it was like a video or an interview or something, this week though. And it was about Paul Bettany, and he's like, we're going to talk about the episode 7 post-credit scene where we find out about White Vision. And he's like, I loved reading everything. Everyone was like, who's going to be the surprise cameo? It's going to be this person, and this person, and Paul Bettany. And he was like, and it was just me. Like, he loved that. He's like, I loved reading everything. And I was like, it's going to be me. I'm just a different version of me.
I love that too, because there's such a cult of secrecy around everything that Marvel does for various reasons. I mean, that's, you know, it goes back to actually what we were talking about fan ownership and claiming ownership of that. And, you know, everybody wants to know everything before it comes out. And on the reverse of that, then you have the ardent no spoilers people, which can sometimes be just as annoying. But I love that Paul Bettany was basically like, well, I'm going to take the expectation that people have about the surprises and what's coming up in the cameos and guest stars, and I'm gonna feed into it, and then it's just gonna be a big old joke because it's just me. It's somebody I've always wanted to work with,
and I
enjoyed that. Yeah,
I love it so much. He, like, people are so easy to mess with, and if I was in that same position, I would probably do the same thing. Because people's expectations are generally so high for these things, whereas I'm very much taking the low expectation road.
Oh, like, me if I am too.
what did I call it on another podcast? Am I entertained? Sure.
I think, yeah, if I was Paul Bettany, I would lean into it super hard and say, yes, you're going to be so surprised. This person. Yeah. And it's just him, like a different version of him.
It's very good.
I loved that. So in the previously on episode, previously on WandaVision, we did discover that Agnes is Agatha Harkness, who is, you know, a crazy, crazy witch.
Yeah, I got the description if you want me to read parts of it.
Yeah, so like, does it say how or what kind of witch she is?
I'm just gonna read and yeah. See what happens.
Yeah.
So in 1693 Salem, a coven of witches led by her mother, Evanora, attempt to kill Agatha for practicing dark magic, but she drains their life forces. In the present, Agatha demands to know how Wanda is controlling Westview and forces her to relieve key moments of her life. And then Agatha discovers that all these magical abilities she got as a child were amplified by the Mind Stone. Dun, dun, dun. And then after the blip, we can talk about more of that stuff later. So basically, it does not describe much of Agatha except that she was doing a lot of dark magic and they tried to get her back in the day. And no, she got them.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, I prefer my magic dark. I know some people take it with milk. Some people have sugar, but I prefer it black.
Yeah.
I thought it was crazy that, you know, she could just be like, suck all your magic out. I thought that was a little weird. And she just leaves you like all decrepit. And it's fine. But so we discovered, you know, she's this crazy witch. And I loved that she's like, oh, didn't you see the runes? Only a witch who casts these runes is able to perform magic inside of them. And I was like, I thought literally nothing of that line. And it's like, that line is so important in the end. And you're just like, I thought it was a throwaway line. I just, you know, Wanda can't do her magic right here because, you know, whatever, it's fine.
That's what they wanted you to think.
Those bitches. So in the clips reel sort of episode, because Agatha wants to know how Wanda is managing this. She's casting right in front of you, but she's casting simultaneously and still going about her life. Like, she's doing such insane magic that she's like, I need to know how you're doing this. So deep dive into your memories. Let's do this. So we actually do get to see like the, you know, the series, her version of a series of unfortunate events that, you know, got to her to where we are. I just realized that they stopped doing commercials at like episode 4 or 5.
No, it's okay. So they do like a little deep dive through her childhood a little bit. You get to see her parents when she's a little kid and why she loves sitcoms. I'm thinking of when
like the Stark bomb came in and I was like, did they?
And I rewatched Age of Ultron because I had questions. Okay. Don't worry, I was doing a lot of laundry, so I was not paying attention. But yeah, they do mention some of the little details in that. And my joke lately has been, oh, so all of WandaVision was really just trying to make Age of Ultron make sense. Got it.
Well, that's another thing that I saw. It was like WandaVision took the wrongs of Ultron and made it better, and it was like things that didn't make sense in Ultron now make sense.
I'm not sure all of it makes sense because film is still pretty messy, but the parts about the twins that it basically gives a little bit more shine to the twins and how they are the way they are and more of their motivation because they're not really characters in Age of Ultron. So I do like seeing why they don't like Tony Stark. It's way more effective to see a Stark bomb blow up her home than it is for like a throwaway line in a 2.5 hour film.
Exactly. I agree. And I love, because that's why I was just like, they stopped doing those commercials and that is weird. Anyway, continuity, people, continuity. But I did like that. I liked that, you know, we first see like the moment where her life just spirals. And I love that when he opened it, you saw Bewitched, you saw the Dick Van Dyke Show, you saw, I can't remember what other shows he had in there, but like you saw the shows that we saw in previous episodes, which I really, really liked. And so you already
know, like she's basically my age. I still want to know how she had Malcolm in the Middle on DVD as a kid. But that's it. That's
listen, this is fiction, and sometimes we take liberties. Okay, sometimes we take liberties.
So she becomes friends with Tony Stark, and then she gets her Malcolm in the Middle. So privilege.
Wait, you're telling me that magic isn't real? Is that what? Are you telling me to suspend my disbelief? How dare you?
I would never.
This show, never.
Never. So then after we see the Stark bomb that, you know, thankfully does not go off and blow up her building. It's a faulty bomb.
Or so we're told, because Agatha is really starting to figure out that all of her magic is chaos based, as Gavin so kindly described to us last time. And I, when rewatching, I was like, oh, this makes sense now.
Yeah, so it's basically...
So did she, like, subconsciously stop the bomb?
Yes, that's the implication, is that it was an early, like, warning sign of her powers, but she hadn't been exposed to the Mind Stone yet, and it hadn't, you know, expanded the stuff that makes her witchy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so it's like she already has these powers, and then the Mind Stones is, like, the powers on steroids.
Yeah. And so they're going through, you know, these pivotal moments in her life, and with the whole, I mean, I've seen it done before where it's like, oh, I don't want to go back into my memories. And then there's always a different kind of door to walk through. And, you know, there was like a whole episode, like two episodes of the Originals, which is a spinoff of The Vampire Diaries, that did this exact same trope. It's like, okay, I've seen this before. Oh, we're going through locked doors in our memories. Different doors will show up.
But for the fun part of this is it's a replay of stuff we've not seen. So we get to see moments of her vision and building a relationship, because again, the films didn't really do that. They just kind of like hook up together and you're like,
right.
I mean, sure.
It's because it's when they like separate all the Avengers and put them in different places in the world. You're like, they're like, oh, Vision and Wanda are together in Scotland. And you're like, huh? Why are they together in Scotland?
You get a hint of that in Civil War.
Yeah. I was going to say, do you not remember the very pivotal chicken paprikash scene?
But it's like, even leave it. It's just a scene that like,
I know. I'm very
a scene.
So yeah, I like, do why? Like that you get those great moments of Vision coming, like something I forgot about Age of Ultron. Vision is the one that saves her off the floating rock in Sokovia. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards you see in WandaVision, he's coming to her because she's in grief, and you get that one line that's either hitting hard with people or people are making fun of that. What is it? Grief is just love persevering.
What is grief if love not persevering?
Exactly. And honestly, it is a very simple line, but we've all been in a hellfire for a year. So if you're getting comfort out of that, that is great. Don't make fun of other people for getting comfort out of a silly show.
On the other hand, I have enjoyed some of the memes. My favorite being,
oh my God, yeah.
My favorite being, you know, what is grief other than love, baby, don't hurt me.
Oh my God. I just saw
honestly,
funny ones earlier.
I love all the memes of this show. Every Agatha meme makes me happy. I don't
care.
Every
Agatha meme is on point.
Yeah, seriously, like, what would Disney do? And not just Disney, I mean, Drag Race UK's Bing Bang Bong. Like, what would any of these people do without the advertising machine that is TikTok?
Literally,
oh my God.
This isn't so even a joke.
That's why it's the downfall of Quibi. You could have had 1,000 million Chrissy Teigen like gifs and gifs running about the internet, but no, you couldn't make anything.
Nope.
Well, because no, like
it's best free advertisement.
Well, it is, because like, okay, you know, like Golden Globes, TikTok is everywhere, because when I was watching the Golden Globes last weekend, right in the middle of the ceremony, they cut to a famous TikToker and he's asking the kids, you know, stuff about the Golden Globes. It's like, Yes, TikTok is everywhere.
And what are the only doing? Thing they know is Chadwick Boseman, which made me cry a little.
I fully cried. First of all, that is one of my favorite TikTokers. Like,
I don't know TikTokers.
I love him because that girl that he talked to, like in our group chat, I was like, where's Jabria? Because he's like, Jabria, are you smart? And every single time, yes! Like her enthusiasm is through the roof. I love it so much. But yeah, why would you not want to utilize TikTok is my thing. Like I found some of the greatest stuff about WandaVision on TikTok. And I'm like, I would not have gotten this anywhere else. And it's such like little, you know, short clips. You're all done.
No, I just anyway. Like anything that gives Catherine Hahn a platform to be seen. So also this is that. Why I'm very glad we're probably going to get more of her later. Spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
But because, no.
You know, well, we'll get there. Like, so I liked, so then we see her a little older. Again, I would like to congratulate the MCU for their wig budget because some of these scenes would have been really rough if she didn't have a good wig. Case in point, the episode when she's in a really dingy, like, underground bunker. And like it was dirty. She was dirty. She didn't even have shoes on. She was just in like a hospital gown. It's fine.
We've all been there after a long Saturday.
We've all done it. It's not a big deal. We're all friends here.
Then they answer some questions for us after they go through some of her more personal history. They go through the recent part where Wanda's trying to recover Vision's body from S.W.O.R.D. And we see that the evil white guy was being evil the entire time and faked all the security footage, and that Wanda was just said goodbye and then toodaloo'd on off to Westview and had her grief explosion.
Well, before that, another important thing that we learned was when she touched the Mind Stone, because it's the Mind Stone, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the Mind Stone. So they, because they say, like, we've been exposing people. Everyone's died. Sorry, everyone's died who's come in contact with it. But all of them are fine. It's not a big deal that we've killed all these people. And so she touches it. And instead of dying and exploding, she just sort of, like, has this vision. And she sees... she sees something. And like I was telling you guys before we started recording, I texted my friend and I was like, what is she seeing? And he's like, the way it's going, I think you'll know. And I was like, okay. And I'm like, is that like an all powerful witch that she's saying? Like, I don't understand. Yes and no. And so, you know, I'm like, what is that? And then she just like kind of falls over, but then she lives. And then, you know, we see the things sort of we do know, and then things that we didn't know enough of, like, you know, when Vision comes in at the Avengers compound and all of that. And then I'm fairly certain then it's, you know, we go out into the street because Agatha has the boys, because she can hear the boys, and she goes out and Agatha's looking all like Calabar from Halloween Town 2. And I love that reference.
That's very good. Very good.
I do love it. Those
does
films.
It not give you that vibe? Like with her robes billowing?
It's like if Halloween Town had more of a budget. This is not a slight against a great film trilogy that I love.
Correct. Trilogy, not quartet. Go on.
Exactly. No, I did say at some point, probably a text to a person, is this the hottest Catherine Hahn's ever been in full witchy? Like, hair and everything.
Right?
I'm like, is this is going to make a lot of young people queer. Like, they're queer.
Right. I love that she's like, oh, yeah. I'm going to go get in costume and I'm going to give you a full beat on my face.
She's like, I'm showing up with
Joan
Crawford eyebrows. I'm giving, yeah, she's like, mm-hmm. I got it. And get the perm.
Right? I love it.
And so she has these, you know, purple ropes that she's, you know, casting because, of course, she's floating.
I mean, if I could, and, honestly, all the time.
She has... If I could, I would
honestly,
too. I mean,
right?
intimidation tactics. You gotta lean into it. So she has the twins, Tommy and Billy, and she's saying, like, what you have is not supposed to be real. You are a thing of myth. And then, like we talked about before, it confused me because I thought we had said this, and then I went back through and like did some research, and no, this is the very first time when Agatha says it, she's like, you're the Scarlet Witch. You're not supposed to be real. And I was like, oh my God, we finally said it.
Even though they credit her as Scarlet Witch in some of the films. So that's why it's confusing. So I did. I remember texting you, Megan, your question is answered.
Because it's like, I was convinced because I'd seen it in the credits. And like, everyone knew when she came in, oh, this is Scarlet Witch. But they never actually state that in the movies. So when she finally said it, I was like, oh my God, oh my God. I'm like, you know, like throwing myself around it again, scaring. I feel so, my dog is probably so excited this show is over. And so I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, they said Scarlet Witch, oh my God. And it was just like a huge thing. And it is a huge thing because they hadn't called her Scarlet Witch before. And you're like, oh man, we're here now. Oh man, we're here now.
And then we find out in the mid-credits scene that the evil white guy who has Vision's remaining parts has reconstructed him into a white Vision and activates him to go do bad stuff.
Using Wanda's power.
Yep, magic.
Yes. And so then, so I was freaking out. I was like, what is this? So then in the final episode, so we're just gonna get, you know, finally into the finale.
The series finale is what it's called. So that's how we know it's gonna be just a limited series. I do
like that a lot of the creators and stuff have said, they're like, we don't have any plans to do more, which is not to say that it won't happen. There's plenty of limited series that get sequels and multiples, but it is nice for them to be like, no, for the moment, this is it.
But I do enjoy that, though, because, you know, I'm fairly certain we've talked about this in the sense that Disney Plus's model right now is great because they're like, okay, how do we take this platform, this brand new platform that's a little over a year old, right? We have this new platform, barely a year old. It is super successful, but how do we make it even more successful? Okay, we bought into the Star Wars hype. We put Frozen 2 on there. How do we make this even better? We're going to do a Marvel show. And that is how we're going to get people locked in. Because then you have that whole fan base that if they haven't already gotten Disney Plus in terms of availability to stream the Marvel movies, they're like, well, now I have to get it because I know that whatever that is, whatever these shows are, that is going to directly play into it. And I had this conversation with my best friend last night. We had a very serious conversation because we talked about WandaVision the night before. And then he's like, you know what? I'm loving this discussion that we're having about WandaVision, but we need to pivot and we need to go and talk about DC. And so we talked about like the issues surrounding the DC universe in terms of like the stupid person that they keep letting have control over things in the DC cinematic universe. God, I can't stop hiring him. Please stop letting him have control of anything.
We're not going to win that battle, Megan.
I know, but it's just like, do you guys not want to be successful? Because that's where we're at.
But that basically goes back to the conversation we're having at the top of the show, which is that the thing that you're referring to, the cut that shall not be named, is an award for bad behavior. It's enough people were like, well, we didn't get what we wanted. And it's like, I mean, just be fucking happy you got something. Sorry,
and a
I don't
lot
know
of
if
people
I can swear.
Now,
but,
our version
no, it's okay. A lot of people now are seeing it as, oh, now we're going to get the good version because spoiler alert, the guy that took over was the real bad guy.
Right.
And, you and know so people are like, oh, this will cleanse that sin. And it's like, no, two people can be bad at different things and do different things.
Exactly.
One's just a bad filmmaker. One's a bad person.
Right. Exactly. Right. He can still be bad.
But the conversation was like, he who shall not be named, when it started coming about that he was going to start casting these movies, the big conversation was, are you going to be borrowing people from the Arrowverse on the CW? And he made the stupidest comments and was like, no, the Arrowverse on the CW is like kitschy, campy, fun, family-friendly stuff. We're darker, we're grittier. The only darker thing about your movies is that I literally can't see them. Like, I can't, you put a filter and I hate it. It's bad. Putting a filter and making it look darker does not make a better movie. That's just how it works.
Hey, like, kids, Batman has guns. That's
my thing is, I feel like there's almost an identity crisis because they're trying to keep up multiple versions of the same characters. So I feel like they're just trying to see what works, then go with it in a way, because I think this kind of goes back to Christopher Nolan. He was doing something very specific that was massively successful financially and critically for the most part. But most, like, otherwise, like, people were just having fun with everything else, like, TV-wise. And there was rights to character issues. And, like, Smallville couldn't use any of the Superman symbols and stuff because of rights issues. They couldn't use Lois Lane until the fourth season. So that felt like a lot of internal stuff that they're still trying to work through, because they started off with one thing and then they were able to acquire and use other things. So it doesn't feel cohesive. And yes, the MCU might be more cohesive, but also some of that leads to boring things.
Right. And that's what our general discussion was, is because, you know, like I said, he didn't want to pull people from the Arrowverse because it wouldn't make sense. We want something to be darker and, you know, grittier and whatever. And I'm like, okay, that works to a point though. Like, even if, I think I watched a season of S.H.I.E.L.D., right? But the thing is S.H.I.E.L.D. went along with the MCU. You didn't have to watch it to gain information, but that show went with events that happened in the movies. They're like, okay, these things happened. We can't pretend like it's not, because it's all part of a bigger thing. What's happening in the Arrowverse has literally nothing to do with, and don't get me wrong, okay? We're not gonna play this game. I'm gonna stop myself before anyone has something to say. I will never, ever be upset about the casting of Viola Davis, okay? I won't. The casting of Viola Davis as Amanda Waller, I'm not going to have anything to say against that. I will never have anything to say against that, but
I just want Viola to get paid, so.
Exactly, so pay her all the monies. So my thing is, though, is that people are going to go on Disney Plus knowing these shows are going to play further into, because we have 23 movies that play all into each other. There's a cohesive storyline throughout them. And that's what's great about it, is that they know, if I don't watch this, something's not going to make sense. So I have to watch this. So of course they're going to get Disney Plus and stream these TV shows. And I think that's great. But, you know, like I'm saying, and I think there's such an intense desire to be a more adult more interesting. I don't want to say interesting, because again, his comments were MCU is family friendly. And I'm like, are we watching the same things? Like I'm devastated watching this as an adult. Like, and I'm not watching it with children. I mean, didn't watch all of them with children, but like, you know, I think there's such a desire to be the opposite, but at the same time, the MCU is working for a reason, okay? It is working for a reason. DC is not going to have the same success rate, not only because they keep letting stupid men do stupid things, but like also nothing is cohesive there. Like, yes, Birds of Prey was a great film, but if you look at Margot Robbie's IMDb, it essentially is like a fluff film that has nothing to do with anything, because in her IMDb, there's a Joker and Harley movie coming out. Like, there are two more movies that she's doing as Harley Quinn that you're like, So Birds of Prey was just there then.
And honestly, steering it back more towards Disney because I want to get back there.
Yeah.
You also have to remember, one, it's Disney. It's always been a child-based company. Well, also, right? The reason it's so successful is, honestly, children are such like money spenders for parents. I have been conned out of probably thousands of dollars in my life because nieces and nephews have asked me to take them to the movies. And
oh, we're the same person.
Okay, when my niece asks me to take her to see Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, and then the same day ask me to go get her some Mamma Mia overalls, I'm not gonna say no.
And why would you? You're a good aunt.
I'm a good person.
But that's another thing is, like, you think kids don't know Batman? You think kids don't know Superman, Supergirl, The Flash? They do. All of the kids do. So it's like, in an attempt to differentiate yourself so greatly from the MCU, DC is inevitably screwing themselves because you're alienating a large portion of the people that are going to spend money. And also, and
honestly,
nothing leads into anything.
I think I call this the Batman Returns things, except Batman Returns is the best DC product ever. They couldn't sell toys at McDonald's after Batman Returns because it was too scary for kids. And
to be fair, I am still terrified of Danny DeVito as Penguin.
And I would have gave him an Oscar.
I do want to give a shout out right now, by the way. There's a great article that just went up on bloodknife.com, which I've never heard of before, but it's a really good article. It's making the rounds in film Twitter right now. It's called Everyone is Beautiful and No One is Horny. And it's sort of about this slate of action Marvel movies and everything that we have. And the comparison is, like, when you look at Batman Returns, the film that came out in 1992, like, it's an incredibly horny superhero movie.
It is such a hot movie.
Yeah, it's very fetishy.
I remember watching it when I was younger being like, am I old enough to be watching this?
I saw it in the theater when I was 9 and I did not like it then, but I was dumb. And it's not one of my favorite movies, and it's just this really great article about, like, you know, it's Marvel movies have for some reason followed the sort of Starship Troopers template where everybody's like incredibly well built and they're incredibly beautiful to look at and you want to see them shirtless all the time, but none of them seem interested in touching each other and they're all very horny for the military.
Yeah, right. I
think that goes back to Disney. It's just,
yeah,
all these movies are essentially made to be toys later because they're going to make more money from toys than they are any of these billion-dollar films.
Well, yeah.
And good for them. I cannot wait to get an Agatha action figure. I cannot wait.
You and me both.
Right. And, like, I don't know. I just feel like there's a reason the MCU is successful, even just beyond, like, merchandising, because, and that's why it took so long to get a Black Widow movie, which, by the way, will make no sense at the end of this, because it's like, you're going to try and give me Black Widow post WandaVision? Really?
You know, like I say, with every MCU property, you just keep your expectations low and are you entertained? Again, Rachel Weisz, she's hot, so I'm fine. I want to get into the series finale because
okay.
I told both of you, I feel dumb because I don't think Agatha is the villain at all. And even rewatching it, I'm like, is she really doing anything bad? Because, like, I'll read some of this description. Let's see. Agatha attempts to take Wanda's chaos magic, which honestly might not be a bad thing. Wanda seems to be needing some help controlling that magic. She's literally said she's going to fix the flaws in her spells. And then Vision's attacked by White Vision. They battle, but then Agatha frees the residents of Westview from Wanda's control and pleads with Wanda, and they convince her to open the barrier. I don't think that's a bad thing.
Okay. The life. I feel like this will take the shortest time to talk about. The Vision on Vision crime that we witnessed, it was like, it was so exhausting almost, because I'm like, oh man.
Welcome back to our 4-hour podcast about the Ship of Theseus.
Like, this is,
One of my favorite, by the way, this is a complete sidebar, but it is a comic related sidebar. One of my favorite moments in all of Marvel Comics was Brian K. Vaughan's Runaways, which got a TV adaptation, which I only watched one season of because I wasn't a fan. But they introduced a character, Victor Mendez, who actually ended up being a cyborg, well, not a cyborg, an android like Vision, kind of related to Vision in a way. I think they consider themselves cousins. Anyways, at one point he was going evil and one of the characters, in order to stop him, asked him a question that he couldn't answer to stop his processor. And the question was, if God is all powerful, can he make a sandwich that's too big for him to eat? And I wish that's how Vision stopped Vision. I really do.
I think it would have been much more entertaining in that way, because I think the Vision on Vision was kind of boring.
It was so boring.
Yeah,
the only thing that made me curious was eventually White Vision realizes he can't kill Red Vision. And then he just
this conversation sounds so ridiculous.
So you know White Vision's going to reappear eventually at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Because you don't know what happens to him. But well, then,
especially when he gave him all of his memories and everything, which I was like, this is weird, because he's also giving him very incomplete memories, as established from three episodes ago, in which Vision doesn't have any information
Wanda
doesn't want
anything.
Him to have. Exactly. Exactly.
So I'm wondering, are all of old Vision's memories, like Vision killed by Thanos, are those memories still in that like body hardware software? And did Red Vision activate this for White Vision? I have questions. So I don't know. Some other things that happened in the episode, Monica frees Pietro, who's just some random person and meant to be an Easter egg for us. So Evan Peters was just an Easter egg. There's no multiverse there, I don't think.
I'm so happy about that, first and
honestly,
foremost.
I'm like, fine with it. We don't need any of the Fox Marvel coming
right, that's
in.
That's
really.
What I'm saying. Like, I loved that. I loved that they did that. And you're just like, hang on, wait. And then at the end, they're like, we're just kidding. It's fine. We're not really going to do all that stupid stuff. But
yeah. Then the episode, kind of like the climax of it, is your generic like Marvel climax. You get Wanda and Agatha fighting in the clouds, and then Wanda traps her with
all
the room.
Her chaos magic.
Thinks she's like hitting her with all this chaos magic, and Wanda just secretly puts up some runes and then makes it where Agatha can't do magic, then turns her into Agnes and traps her, which means we're going to see her again.
Yeah.
But this is where I'm like, is Agatha really the villain? Are they trying to set her up to kind of be like Loki, where they're like kind of villain, but you love them and they're just going to keep bringing them back a few times?
Well, that definitely sort of feels like it. And if you want the comic book perspective, Agatha has always been kind of my brain between Agnes and Agatha keeps bouncing
back
and forth.
It's too close in my brain.
Yeah, I agree. The she's always kind of like, is she bad? Is she good? She has her own allegiances. She is one of the Salem witches. She set up a new Salem at one point. She kidnapped the Fantastic Four's baby, but then she became the baby's nanny. So like you have lots of shades between, you know, she is the one who taught Scarlet Witch actual magic. But I would say that besides killing her coven 400 years ago, 500 years ago at this point, like anything that she did on the show, I don't know. And I almost feel like they did the Agatha all along thing two episodes ago as like a MacGuffin, as a red herring, to be like,
yeah,
to be like, oh, look at all the evil stuff she did, because we don't really have any evil stuff for her to do, like, because that's, I mean, Agatha all along, it wasn't Agatha all along, it wasn't.
I think maybe they accidentally just wrote a really catchy song and then they're like, we have to use it, and then they're like, wait, what did she do?
Right.
Oh, well.
And that's my,
we'll bring her back.
And that's my problem with, you know, Marvel has constantly been criticized in terms of its villains, that it doesn't create fleshed out, well-rounded villains. You have Loki, but everybody else has been sort of lacking in motivation or lacking in anything that makes them sort of memorable. And so when you finally get Catherine Hahn playing a villain, you know, an actor who can really ring every scene for what it's worth, And then you give her motivation is that she's evil and she wants to have power to be evil. Like, it's just like, I don't, come on. You guys had, you had 8 episodes to do this. Give us just a tiny bit more.
I don't think she did anything evil.
Right.
Because how do we know that the Coven of Witches from the very beginning of the episode we saw for 2 minutes aren't the evil ones?
They didn't seem friendly. Well, they were tying her to a stake.
They were ready to burn somebody without a trial. So
right. They were not of the trials in Salem. This was not their MO. They were like, no, that's for the people who hate us. No. I feel like it's a little weirdly ambiguous in terms of Wanda and Agatha. I think the real villain, which as I'm sitting there watching it, I'm like, she is still in town. Where is she? The real villain at the end of it all, which is kind of lackluster in the way that it was presented, was Director Fuckboy. Like, he was the worst. Guy. Yeah. And so, like, he's like, all right, guys, she's raising the barrier. She's letting people out. It's our time. We got to go in. And like, he's trying to literally kill Wanda. And like, as everyone's kind of screaming at Wanda, you know, Tommy and Billy are like, oh my God, mom's in trouble. We got to go. And they get to her. And this is right after, you know, she has like a little, you know, minor emotional moment. And she's, you know, I don't think that Agatha and Wanda are evil. I think at the end of the day, the villain is, in fact, the Director of S.W.O.R.D. And, you know, like when Darcy comes out and hits him and she's like, have fun in jail. Like, I love that
they paid Kat Dennings probably her entire episode salary because they realized, oh, no, we left her in the van.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. That was killing me. No, we're not going to do that to her, right?
Yeah.
We can't do that to her.
So, like, he gets arrested. That happens more of in a mid-credits scene. And then we get the big thing that really happens, because all of this is kind of like setup stuff, is that Wanda does take the boys home, says goodbye to Vision, and then kind of collapses the barrier. And then Red Vision and the kids are kind of gone. And I did like that. I'm not sure if it's a permanent thing, but I did like that very portion. It's not going to be permanent because of a post-credit scene, but
right.
I thought that was a good moment, but then I had problems afterwards.
I wept at that moment. Like, it was so emotional. I was like, I think in my like aggressive text to Chelsea, I was like, why am I crying? Like, this is so intense. But going back just like very quickly to why I don't think the two of them are villains, Agatha just wants to obtain as much power as possible. That doesn't necessarily make her evil. She just wants to be powerful. She doesn't say, I'm going to destroy the earth. She doesn't say any of those things. So I think
she's not a defined character, though. She's been playing a role throughout this. And so we don't get to know her except for these last two episodes where we're told she's evil, but she's not really evil.
And so that's my thing. I don't necessarily see her as villainous or evil. I think, you know, I think her, and I don't know, I mean, can have something to say to this completely. I don't know that it's because it wasn't. The only thing that I can think of is, you know, she tells Wanda, you don't know what you've just unleashed, but is that not what Agatha was trying to get her to do, is to unleash something? Because it felt like that was the only evil thing really that she was trying to do, was just take all of Wanda's chaos magic that was, you know, previously unavailable to her. And she was like, you know, she just kept saying, you don't know what you've unleashed. So I don't know if that, I don't know how that one is supposed to play out, but I also don't see Wanda as the villain. One, because this, like we said, this is what we saw on over 9 episodes was just a picture of the depth of grief that one person can experience, and how for someone like Wanda, who has all of this intense power, how that can be amplified and create this whole world where she's like, I literally can't go forward anymore. I'm so just like destroyed that this, all of this power came out of me and this all happened. So again, I don't think that makes Wanda evil either. I don't think either one of them are villainous. I don't think they're evil, because at the end of the day, the whole point of this was for Wanda to come into her own and see herself as the Scarlet Witch. So I don't know if there, I can't speak to anything that happens after this. I can't speak to the comic books. Again, this could be a Gavin thing, but as far as like from my viewpoint, I don't see either of them as villainous. And I think it could have done a better job of Captain White Boy. Is it Tyler? Is that his name?
Yeah, Tyler. Okay. But like Gavin, I said, White Boy. What were you going to say? Because I know you have something on your mind.
Well, I mean, I can't speak to anything else that's going to happen in the comic books or anything that did happen. I said last episode that you had me on, Wanda's sort of one of the most underserved characters in Marvel history. Every writer that's worked on her until, like, I want to say 2015 has made her somewhat villainous at some point in time. She's done some pretty awful things. She's been responsible for an attempted genocide and a death and multiple deaths. I will say, when it comes to this, I agree. I don't think Wanda is evil, but I do think, you know, everybody deserves to process their grief, but she was forcing her grief on multiple people, and they went really far to tell you how awful she truly was using this power. And I get it, it's a power she didn't even know she had, that she didn't know that she could control. But there's the line that broke me the most is there during the fight with Agatha. At one point she says, you know, the difference between you and me is I didn't mean to hurt those people. And it's like, is that a defense? Is that like that feels like the people that are like, you know, like guns don't kill people. People kill people.
The way I see it is it's like the problem we have in tons of different wars in real life and even in the MCU. They did not mean to destroy New York. They were trying to get the bad guy. We did not mean to kill all these civilians in bombings. We were trying to get the bad guy.
So right, there's exactly.
A lot of collateral damage that us in the world and in the MCU that needs to be contended with, and it's never done. So Wanda did not mean to do any of this stuff, but there's no accountability. And I think accountability is important. Like, we saw Tony Stark get away with being an asshole with no accountability for so long. And his solution was in Civil War, where they're like, we're going to sign up with this whatever government organization, blah, 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 and we're going to follow these rules. But wow, they're corrupt too. So I think they need to figure out how to have a more nuanced conversation about, you can have good intentions and still do bad things.
Yeah, and I completely agree. And that's exactly what it comes down to, is that it feels like there's no deeper thought. And what especially rung hollow to me was, you know, at the end, you get that what's supposed to be a cathartic moment between Monica and her, when Monica's like, you know, I would have brought back my mom if I could. And I totally get that. I have a dead parent. I get that. Impulse, but the way that she said it, and I'll give her props, actually, she said it almost like she was scared, not like she was like, oh, you know, I really mean this. Like, she was like, you can come in here and fuck some shit up, so like, why don't I give you what you want until you go away? And I thought it was a little strange when she was like, oh, they'll never know what you sacrificed. And it's like, they sacrificed however long of their life for her entertainment.
It may have only been 2 weeks, but they literally, like, it's Deborah Jo Rupp, I think, says it.
Yeah.
It's like, if you're not going to like let us go, can you kill us? Like, she would rather die than go through the nightmares that Wanda is accidentally doing. And you just have to realize the pain nightmares you're inflicting on people. So that's why whenever I was enjoying this show while it was doing its like little thing, like it's cute little setup up until it became the Marvel film that was very thoughtless.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, we're going to get all this and then we're not going to care about the people who were actually impacted. I got it. And while we don't even have a good villain in it, so it's like there's no nuanced conversation to it.
That was like my whole point is that, you know, the real villain was the director of S.W.O.R.D. and it was so lackluster that, you know, yes, I mean, it wasn't lackluster when Darcy slammed him with the ice cream truck or whatever it is. And, you know, she says, have fun in jail. And then you like, you see him off in the distance getting arrested and that's fine. But that he's the real villain in this. And there was not enough of a resolution there to be satisfying because we're so focused on the other two. But at the same time, you know, because in that same conversation with Monica, and I do agree, she is definitely scared. Like, you know, not that, you know, Monica stepped in and she was like, all right, I'm going to do, and we saw her body do the crazy thingies with the bullets. And I'm like, oh, this is weird.
We saw her body be energy.
Yeah.
See, I learned.
And like, you know, we see Wanda's son, you know, stop the bullets, which I thought was really cool and all that. But, you know, even though Monica had stepped up to be on their side, she still was scared in that conversation with Wanda. And, you know, it's interesting because Wanda then has the response of, I didn't mean to hurt them. And even if I said that, they're never going to look at me in the same way again.
My view on what Wanda and Monica is, it's kind of like when somebody apologizes to you and you're still hurt and you just say, that's okay. Like you just brush it aside because you're more concerned about them in that moment than you are about yourself. And it doesn't actually do any healing. So.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I guess I love the awareness in Wanda in that moment because she's like, doesn't matter what I say, doesn't matter what I do. These people are never going to forget what I did. And even if I didn't mean to do it, even if I didn't mean all of this stuff, there's nothing I could do to fix it. So, like, I guess that's awareness is cool.
I will say, and like, I'm not immune to the emotional, you know, stuff that occurs in the episode. And I special shout out to Elizabeth Olsen for the look on her face when she's walking back to her house with Vision and kids, and like the poetry of her like tucking her children away who are only going to be memories. So she's like tucking the memories away. And yeah, the stuff that she's doing in her face in those scenes alone is worth the price of admission. But
her sisters could never.
Hey,
I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's
give
mean.
Michelle Tanner more credit, dude.
How rude. That's Stephanie, but whatever.
It's fine. They are like gajillionaires in the fashion world.
Oh, yeah. It's
fine. With Elizabeth's name, no less. So but,
that's a whole nother conversation we can have after the podcast about the Olsen twins because I love them.
Yes.
I do think all of the questions and concerns we've raised are, you know, and it is exactly that, Chelsea. It's that accountability, which is so, I don't know. And like, it makes me think, and this is also a tangent, but it makes me think of He Who Shall Not Be Named when he directed his Superman movie and they just absolutely leveled Metropolis and people were like, well, like what the fuck? And he was like, well, it's what would happen if there were real superheroes. And it's like, but this is a fantasy. Like it doesn't like, you know, we don't need mass
Reeves
murder.
Never leveled a town.
You know, people hate Superman Returns, but I will give it one thing over Man of Steel is there's a scene when Metropolis is falling apart where Brandon Routh is just flying around saving people. And you never get that in Man of Steel. And I do not believe in a Superman who is not going to save the people that he's going to hurt.
Unrelated, I'll cut this out, but I actually don't mind Superman Returns. I
actually really like Superman Returns as well.
Okay, too, we're safe here. Yeah,
exactly. Don't worry.
Safe zone.
No one will know.
No one.
But literally the moment Chelsea was talking about, you know, oh, we destroyed this place. It's fine. You know, whatever. The moment she said that, I'm like, Man of Steel, because they literally took out full skyscrapers, destroyed Metropolis, and no one ever said, like, the moment I walked out of that movie, I went with my best friend and I was like, who's going to pay for all of that? Like, who is going to pay for that? Because, you know,
and this is not Superman a Batman versus Superman podcast, but in the beginning, whenever Ben Affleck's Batman sees all this destruction and decides Batfleck. He hates Superman, it's kind of like, you know what? I'm kind of on your side.
I've actually never seen Batman v Superman, but I will say that just jogged my mind.
I can't get my life back
just
for that movie.
Just watch the Wonder Woman clip online and maybe the Ben Affleck opening, and that's it. It's such a long movie.
But what you just said jogged my memory of in Batman Returns, the scene where he's walking with Selina Kyle down the street and they're looking at the newspaper headlines, and he's like Batman blows it. Where do they get their, he probably saved millions of dollars in public destruction, you know? And I just think it's funny that Bruce Wayne is upset that he's not getting the, you know, credit for stopping things like that.
In the first mid-credit scene, yeah, they're doing cleanup. Jimmy Woo's kind of in charge of that stuff.
I love
and
that.
And then this lady brings Monica into the movie theater to say somebody wants to meet her. And I immediately knew it was either Brie Larson's going to show up or they're going to ask
her. I thought it was Brie. She said they're waiting for you in the...
Yeah, I bet they filmed it in quarantine, though, so they probably couldn't get Brie Larson. She's prepping. But whenever that moment did get me, whenever they turned into the Skrull and I watched the scene again, and they're referencing Nick Fury. They keep using pronouns. And when they point to space, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see Monica Rambeau in space, because Nia DaCosta's directing that and I really like her.
And like the look on Monica's face when she's like, oh, I'm going to space. Like, she was so
excited. I know, she's been
excited.
Grounded. So it's like,
yeah,
this series exhausts me. Most of the people exhaust me. But then there's little moments where I get to see Monica Rambeau be happy. So that's kind of what I want.
Because she's like walking into an empty theater. And I was like, Brie Larson's going to be here. Brie Larson's going to be here. Brie Larson's going
to
be here.
Because we would not have been able to handle Brie Larson.
No.
A queer person.
No. And I would have fallen out.
Would not have been okay.
So she says, because when she doesn't say a pronoun. She said, an old friend of your mother's wants to talk to you. And I was like, oh shit, it's Brie Larson. Oh my God, it is Carol. Oh, it's Carol, it's time. And then she turns into the Skrull. Yeah. And then they said he, and I was like, damn it, they meant Nick Fury. God, so mad, I thought it was gonna be Carol. And then, so now we know for certain, man, now we know everything that is going to play heavily into Captain Marvel 2, because I just want to see, because, you know, throughout the season, right, when anyone has alluded to Carol, anyone has alluded to Captain Marvel, anyone has alluded to, like, Monica's mom, I feel like you can feel it, like, radiating off the screen.
There's a lot of resentment.
There's a lot. And so I feel like... that is going to be some amazing chemistry on screen between the two of them. Like, we're going to get some really good hostile scenes from that whole scenario, which I'm very excited about.
And then the final post-credit scene, which I'm very glad, the only thing I was spoiled about on Twitter was there was one. We get to see...
Thank God, by the way. I would have turned it off.
I usually text you about these things too.
Yes, you did.
But no,
you did.
I call it the cottagecore moment of, oh, this is a nice little cozy place. Elizabeth Olsen just sitting on her porch, then goes inside to get some tea. And then the camera wanders and we have the astral form of Scarlet Witch. And the internet told me she's studying Darkhold. So Gavin might have to explain this
well,
to
me. Well, that's the book
Monica. Wait, one second.
Not Monica.
She hears the voices of the twins in her head crying for help. Because I was listening. I had to watch on my phone the first time because I wanted to watch before people were monsters online.
That's
and then
fair.
I watched proper. And I'm like, wait, is that Billy yelling in the thing? And then I had to rewind and I'm like, oh my goodness. So the twins are coming back in some form, I think. They're stuck somewhere. But I wonder what's going on. So Gavin, can you educate us on any of this?
As you mentioned in the previous episode, you know, the thing about Billy and Tommy is that they, you know, they were creations by her magic. In the comic books, you find out that their souls are tied to a demon, and that's the reason. Same. Like, the, yeah, and so she sort of had to sacrifice them in order to stop this demon from coming true or coming into fruition. I don't know if that's Mephisto, by the way, is the demon, I believe. And I don't say that as though I don't know who Mephisto is. I just haven't read that story or in a long time. Don't come for me, comic nerds. I know my stuff.
And they've been saying the word Mephisto a lot. And I've been like, y'all, we're still in a Disney run Marvel. We're going to like, we're not going too deep.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And essentially, like, he gets reborn as Billy Kaplan, who is, you know, ends up being a child to another couple, but really he's Billy Maximoff, or William Maximoff, if you will, along with his brother, Thomas Shepard. And, you know, these souls are reincarnated. I have no idea if that's how they're going to do this at all, or if they're just going to come up with some other way, you know, and
it's going to be some Infinity Stone type magic.
And like, we know the next place that Elizabeth Olsen, Scarlet Witch, is popping up is Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness. So maybe it'll get addressed there. Maybe they're saving it for something else. Who knows? But I am curious if they do come back, if they will come back as teenagers, since we're getting, as you mentioned in the previous episode, we already have a teenage daughter of Scott Lang. We're getting the Kate Bishop Hawkeye. We're getting Miss America Chavez in, I'm not sure where she's showing up, but I remember that they cast her.
I think she's getting a TV show.
Maybe. That sounds right. You know, it's so hard to follow all this stuff.
It is so hard.
It is.
I feel like there's like a new project announced every week, and then three projects like put on the back burner.
We recorded one over on Community Rewatch about Disney Investor Day, and we did not even hit all of it. And I'm like, oh, this sounds fun. What is it?
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, the Once Upon a Stream episode is 2 hours for that.
And like, not to bring up more controversy, but that's like Disney Investor Day when they were going to announce the Cara Dune spinoff, and then they were like,
oh yeah, how they nixed it the month before because they're like, maybe we shouldn't.
Yeah, this is maybe not a good idea. But yeah, so who knows like what they're going to end up doing with the kids themselves. But obviously, yeah, they're clearly coming back in some way, shape, or form. It's probably going to be mystical. But I do think the next time we see them, they maybe won't be children.
Yeah, teenagers make more sense. You can work them longer on sets.
Absolutely. It's 100%.
Oh, yeah. So one, if I could astral project myself and do two things at once, I would. First of all,
that annoys me because
I can't do that. Like, it
you'd be reading
me
so much fan fiction.
I can get so much done. Is that the point? Okay, free in there. But the book she's reading is the book Agatha had and was telling her, like, you're Scarlet Witch. You're not supposed to exist. Like, that was the book that she was reading. And my thought process is, you know, like Gavin just said, is that we do see her next in the multiverse and she does hear Billy's voice. So my thought process is that's why she goes to Doctor Strange. She goes to talk to him because he can help her find them somewhere in the multiverse.
Maybe Doctor Strange comes to her because there's a disturbance and things, because she clearly wants to be left
alone.
That
could be it too.
Are you implying that the doctor will make a house call? Sorry. I'll see myself out.
But I do, I didn't think of it from that perspective, no. But like, yeah, I think either she's going to seek out him or he's going to seek out her. And that is how that is going to play into it, is that she heard that voice right then at the end of this episode on purpose. Like, that is how that plays into the next Doctor Strange movie.
And I will say, I love the whole physicality of Elizabeth Olsen's witchiness. I was very into it when she was reading and stuff and doing all the hand movements. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like this show would not work without her being a good actress, because there's a lot of moments that call for her to be really sad. And luckily, she's been in a lot of sad girl indie films. And I think she's a great performer. So a lot of this would not work unless we believed her to be sad. Like, she's better than the material is giving her.
And I do think it like gave her a chance to stretch too, because I think she nailed the tone of every single one of them. And even though they abandoned that TV show, that, you know, I'll be honest, we talked right through it, but if they had done that flashback episode more like a TV show clip show, I would have flipping loved that. And I just wanted to put that out there. But also, once again, fan ownership. They made the thing they made. I'm happy with it. Whatever.
I still enjoyed that episode, but would I have loved it in the style of like the Golden Girls clip show? Of course.
It would have been fun. Whatever. You know, it's fine. It didn't happen. But I think that she was asked to really stretch the sort of, you know, because there is a very specific language to sitcom acting. There's a very specific stopping for reactions, and you know, and even when people were like, wow, she really pitch perfectly captured Julie Bowen in Modern Family, it's like, yeah, that's what she was doing, you know.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just mere mimicry, it was actually like trying to put herself in those different layers. And so I don't know, I tend to think that she gave a really brilliant performance, but I think you're right. I think she elevated some of the lesser material.
Yeah. And I mean, I wasn't trying to be mean about Mary-Kate and Ashley earlier, obviously big fans.
Well, I've called them and you know, they're not coming on the show,
but you know, I mean, I think she's an incredible actress, and I, like Chelsea said, watched some really sad bitch movies that she's been in because I love her and I think she's an amazing actress. And I think, like, she talked about it on some show before where, like, she talked about, like, the amount of, like, hand choreography. She's had to, like, reconfigure, like, the muscles in her fingers because it's, like, she said it took a long time. And I was like, yeah, I guess. But I will say, since I brought it up in the former episode when we talked about how she touched the Infinity Stone, and I know Gavin could speak to this, is that when Agatha discovers, you know, she doesn't actually have any of the chaos magic, that Wanda had put up the runes and like tricked her into thinking she had it. And, you know, she withered her own self, whatever. And then all of that, she just, it like gets scary red, like scary, scary red everywhere. And like there's storm clouds and everything. And then she like has this burst of energy. And then she comes in the Scarlet Witch costume. And I know that, and so that's what she saw when she touched the Infinity Stone. She saw herself in that costume. And so I got really excited. I was like, oh yeah, it is what she saw in the Infinity Stone. Oh my god, that's what she saw. So she did see a powerful witch. She just didn't know it was herself. And we didn't know that before I get yelled at, those of us who have not read the comics did not know that it was her that she was
how to read. Why am I always called out?
That's what's great about comics, all the pictures.
I love pictures.
So it's, you know, she had, once she got into that costume, I was like jazzed because she does look amazing in it. And I know, like I said, I know that people were angry, I guess, that she did not previously appear in this costume, but, and this is my question, did she not appear in this costume until now, because they hadn't used the words "you are the Scarlet Witch" until now?
I think so, because you said in the last episode that they can only use the name if they're in costume, and she's never been in costume.
That's true.
I think, you know, I'm of two minds on the complaint about the costumes, because, like, you know, we saw the Halloween episode, and in the Halloween episode there was a pretty direct translation of what the costume looks like in the comic books, and it's like, okay. But also, I think that the problem with the previous movies is, you know, everybody else got cool, like Captain America has a cool, very recognizable suit, and Black Panther and everything, and Wanda gets a coat.
And honestly, none of the films have ever been about her, even Ultron, which was kind of supposed to be about her and an emotional journey, and she feels like an afterthought.
Got a costume in that.
Oh, the Quicksilver got Adidas sportswear.
Yes, he got some new shoes. He got a jacket.
Exactly. And so I think, you know, I do enjoy seeing this sort of, it's like a very loose adaptation of the Kevin Wada redesign from 2013. Kevin Wada is an amazing artist who comes from the fashion world, moved into comic books. And so a lot of his outfits are really graphic looking, and his sort of redesign of her outfit was like black pants, like a red and black corsety top, coat like she wears in the movies, and this super ornate crown. And I like that they gave the ornateness to the crown and gave her the sort of red and black colors as opposed to the more traditional like red and pink, or the, you know, it definitely gave nods to that, and I do appreciate that. It's very leathery, whatever. I guess everybody's got a secret leather fetish when they're a superhero.
I'm just thinking, man, I cannot breathe very well.
I know. That's the one last thing to bring it back to Catwoman. You know, Michelle Pfeiffer had to be vacuum sealed into that vinyl
literally
costume.
Sewn into a costume. Yeah. This like,
and then
she
like
was
an
still
attachment
able to do all the stunts herself.
She could only wear it for something like 11 minutes at a time, or else her skin would suffocate. So like,
that's rough.
Commitment.
Again, where's her Oscar?
Agreed.
But I mean, I love the costume. I love that whole thing. And I love like how heavily she's just like leaning into flying now. She's like, this will be fine. I'm going to fly. I'm just going to fly out of here now.
Yeah, we got a little bit of that before, but now I feel like because it's more about her, they actually care about what she's doing and things.
Right. And I think that's an interesting question. So, like you said, you know, Wanda's been one of the most underserved characters in this comic book universe. So it's like, do you feel like maybe this was a nice way to fix that?
I do think this is a way to retcon some of their mistakes of the past and give these less, quote unquote, lesser characters the spotlight, because also they've lost a lot of their big stars except for like Thor and the Guardians. And
which
I would listen to that
arguably
band.
We might
Thor
be getting
and the Guardians.
Oh, what are the odds Chris Hemsworth can sing?
Oh my God, I love that.
But yeah, I do think like for some of this, I feel like we know for a fact they're trying to test it out on Disney Plus to see how it is, because WandaVision, it's a show about a woman and people are already super divisive. And now that they have shows about women of color, and we're just going to see, I feel like they're pushing the envelope and testing things because Marvel and Disney are very bad at making diverse films, like, except for like,
oh,
we get the one Black Panther movie, we get the one Captain Marvel movie. So now I feel like Disney Plus is the testing center, and then maybe we're just gonna throw them in one with the white guy and then throw them in another one with the white guy, or make a team one, but make sure we have X amount of white peoples in it. So
Now they not only have to like restructure Black Panther because Chadwick Boseman, and they're not gonna recast T'Challa. Yeah, and I mean, you have Anthony Mackie as Falcon, which fine, but, and you're giving, you know, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, like he's fronting this show with Sebastian Stan.
But I think that's exactly what Chelsea was just saying, you know, where it's like, but it has to be a show with Sebastian Stan, you know, it can't just be the Falcon, or, you know, I agree. It does feel like
it has to be the buddy show.
Yeah, it's the Disney test kitchen, you know.
But to be fair, would it, if it didn't have Bucky, would it even be as watched if it was just Falcon?
Because I think there's a universe where it could be, but I don't think Disney is willing to test it out. Because also with WandaVision, you had Wanda and Vision.
Right.
The white dude, so like,
we and you all, Vision. And they already know we don't need to do anything. We could just call it Loki and everyone will watch it because that's a fully developed character that people also, are obsessed with.
He's just a white dude.
People love a white dude.
They do. And, you know, people didn't want him to be dead. But, I mean, so this was a way to, you know. I am interested, though, I will say. I am interested to see, now that WandaVision is over and, you know, it is what it is. I am interested to see, in terms of Falcon and the Winter Soldier and Loki, are going to play into the next phase. Because we know they are. Like, that is the point of these shows, is that these are setting things up for future films. So it's like, what is Falcon the Winter Soldier? And technically, Loki's dead. This is just time-hopping, because
okay, spoilers for Endgame, they go back in time and Loki disappears with the stone. So it's kind of like how we had the Gamora die in Infinity War, but the one from the past comes from Endgame. So technically there's two, but it's the same.
I hate time travel so much for this very purpose. Like,
let's not overthink it. Any last thoughts before we get out of here?
That is one of my last thoughts. I'm very interested to see, like, we know what this is setting up, so I'm interested next to see what the next two are setting up.
I mean, that's how they get you. Everything's about the setup for the next thing. Nothing's about the closure.
But I am excited to see what it sets up. I think at the core of this show, grievances aside, I thought this was a really wonderful portrait of, like I said, the depth of grief and what that can do to a person. I thought if we are just focusing on that, I thought that was a really great thing. And it would not have sold as well if she didn't play it right. So I agree with that. So I enjoyed it. I'm interested to see when Catherine Hahn pops back up and if it isn't going to be in Doctor Strange. Because she says, like, you know, she does say repeatedly, you don't know what you've just unleashed. And she's like, when I need you, I'll know exactly where to find you. So it's like in the back of your head, you're like, when is that going to happen then? And God, I will be so angry if that is a dropped plot point.
She just raised her quote now, so that way she won't be in the movies. She's just too expensive. What about you, Gavin? Any thoughts going forward about WandaVision?
No, I mean, they're entertaining. Marvel knows how to make an entertaining show. And I enjoyed it while it was on. So I'm sure I'll watch Falcon and Winter Soldier and Loki and whatever's next that they throw at us. I know they're shooting the Ms. Marvel series, and yeah. But, you know, I always come with some mixed feelings for me, but that's, you know, that's, it's anything it's that's a product. Yeah. Anything that's a, exactly, mixed reviews always, anything that's a product of a giant corporation, I think deserves a little scrutiny anyways. So it's not going to hurt them. So
same. I'll probably watch them. I'm not sure if I'll watch week to week. We'll see what happens, how interested I am. But, you know, we'll see. Again, the bar was very low of, am I entertained? And then I got some decent performances out of it. And I actually care about Captain Marvel and stuff. So that's kind of cool knowing it's coming up. And now it's going to try to make me care about Doctor Strange. So we're going to see what happens.
Yeah, it's a... not going to make me popular to say it's very hard to make me care about Benedict Cumberbatch. So
I do not care about him at all. He's not very good at all.
And that's one of those things where it's like, my friend and I were talking about how many we've seen in theaters, and the only ones I have not seen in theaters, I have not seen the second Guardians of the Galaxy in theaters. I have not seen Dark World because I don't like Dark World. And which, speaking of Thor, I swear to God, if you don't bring Darcy back to Love and Thunder, I will destroy you all. I will personally storm Marvel's offices. Okay. I will set that boardroom on fire.
Chris Hemsworth is bodyguard, and he's just going to like get you.
I'd be cool with that too. You know what? Win-win for me. So then also, I did not see Doctor Strange in theaters. I did not see those three in theaters because they didn't seem enticing to me. So I'm like,
I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of them in theaters because I, for the most part, can watch them at home. And
now I'm just stressed that I'm gonna have to go see this stupid movie in theaters.
I will happily see these in theaters just because I've been stuck in my house for the better part of a year, and we'll see anything and cry in theaters at this point. But, you know, it's going to be whatever. I don't care. I just want women to be paid.
Yeah, at the end of the day.
So, yes, wrapping up, Gavin, you've been a great guest and have educated us. We're going to steal you onto so many other podcasts.
Little old me.
Little old you.
You've answered literally so many questions so that we had.
Questions. Oh, good. Because I was like,
so much info we didn't have.
I'm like, did I do any good here?
Yes.
Are you kidding? You answered good. So many questions.
But yes, where can people find you and your podcast online? Because you had a recent great episode about Ang Lee that I loved.
Thank you very much. It was a really fantastic episode. Our guest was Manish Mathur, and he was fantastic. He's the one who pitched us on Ang Lee, and it just worked out very much the same way you did with Audrey Hepburn. And great episodes abound. So we thank you and all of our other great guests that have come on to just talk about movies with us. But I co-host a podcast called The Mix Reviews. It's a film podcast where we take 2 weeks. We focus on a subject such as an actor, director, or mini genre. And then we cram as much information as we can into an under 2 hour setting. And then we tell you what's the best and what's maybe not the greatest of, you know, whatever our subject is. You can find that online at The Mixed Reviews on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We're on every single podcast app. Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, Audible. You can find us, just search The Mixed Reviews. And if you want to follow me online, I'm on Twitter at @friendlessmean. It's how I plan to die someday.
Perfect. And I will say, your podcast is the only podcast I've done my homework for, because I notoriously either don't rewatch the episodes of Community or do it right before we record it. And I watched every single Audrey Hepburn thing, and it was the time of my life. Such a good time.
It's so much fun because it's like cramming. You know, I don't think I said it on your guys' show, but I was on another show recently, Cast of Cthulhu, just giving them a plug. And, I think it like secretly activates the like gross part of my brain that's like, I want to be an academic. But that's what it is. It's both pleasurable and I feel like I learned something. So,
oh yeah. So much cool stuff. All the trivia that I'm going to use at bar trivia when I'm free. So Megan, where can the great people find you?
I'm on Twitter at Miss Megan Mann. I am not a widow, so it's M-I-S-S. Wouldn't that be great though if I just had a nice widow backstory and I have like 5 ex-husbands in my wake and they're all dead? That would be great. Oh
yeah, it's not your fault they keep dying.
It's not my fault. I get a new robe every time. Like, I don't know. It's fine.
Okay, Agatha.
Fine. God, now I wish that was my existence. Ugh. Anyway, and my bookstagram is at Ginger and Champagne, and I'm also on the Once Upon a Stream podcast, which is a Disney Plus podcast, and you are welcome to find that on social media at Once Upon a Stream. Chelsea?
Okay, I'm Chel725 on Twitter and Letterboxd. I'm actually using it this year. And too much Twitter, honestly. And then I have this podcast here is at Moxie Gals Pod on the Twitter and Instagram. Please subscribe to us. I'll start reading reviews online. I'll get drunk and do that if you guys want. And then I also have the Cinema Gals podcast. It's at Cinema Gals and the Community Rewatch podcast. Please go listen, because I got to interview Megan Gans recently and cried over her dog. So maybe I'll keep parts of that in.
Aww.
But thanks everyone for listening. Bye-bye.
Thank you for having me on.
Yay. Bye.